Before I get started today, I wanted to make sure that I gave a big shout out to Jeannie Colwin Coaching. Jeannie Colwin is a stress and mind-body coach based in Los Angeles. She spent 16-plus years battling fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue, and many other TMS symptoms that left her physically and mentally exhausted. After healing herself completely, Jeannie is now obsessed with getting her clients fast results through her one-on-one coaching program. With support, consistency, and accountability, clients will learn to stop making pain the problem. You may remember hearing Dr. Schubiner say that we need to address our emotional issues and or life situations that need changing. But for many of us, this emotional work and making life changes is just too scary. So we don't take any action at all. Or we dive deeper into learning more information and attempts to avoid leaving this comfort zone. Does this sound familiar? This is why the right one-on-one coaching support could be a game changer for you. Besides decreasing their stress and chronic symptoms, Jeannie's clients are changing careers, increasing their income, and having more intimate connections in their relationships. Most importantly, they're having fun again. What's possible for you if pain wasn't holding you back anymore? Jeannie offers free 45-minute consults where together you'll identify what's holding you back so you can take your next steps towards healing. Go to her website, jeanniecolwin.com. That's JeannieKulwin.com, and book your free call today. Welcome back to the show. It is Thursday, March the 30th. My name is Eddie Lindenstein. I'm the host of the Mind and Fitness Podcast. And as always, I want to make sure that I thank the patrons of the show. If you're interested in supporting the show, go to patreon.com/themindandfitnesspodcast. We are going to be doing another live session at some point, probably late April, perhaps very early May, but the hope is late April. I'm still securing a date on that. But it's an opportunity for only patrons to be able to attend. So throw a few bucks in the tip jar, help keep this thing on the air for free, all that kind of stuff. So let me give a shout out to Lauren, Albert, Jeff, Julie, Deborah, Daniel, Kirk, Emily, Elise, Enda, Dominic, Sasha, John, Jason, Mindy, Irina, Kelly, Tony, Michael, Mike, Christina, Ross, Julie, Brian, Sarah, Arnie, and Barb. Thank you all so much for continuing to support the podcast every single month, year, day, week, everything. So thank you for being here. I have got an interview this week. I had come across, and I talk a little bit about this at the beginning, but I came across a post on LinkedIn by somebody talking about burnout and stress and symptoms in the corporate world, which is a nice change of pace in terms of perspective, because I feel like a lot of people don't kind of start there. Her name is Rebecca O'Brien, and she's actually got a really, she's got a new exciting endeavor that she's going to be going on with someone named Nicole North. She's launching a new LinkedIn Live and audio room named Well at Work, Leading Wellness with her and Nicole North. And the mission is to discuss and inform the professional community of mental health and well-being strategies through leadership that creates a culture of wellness. It'll be happening every Tuesday at 12 o'clock Eastern, and it starts next week. So I'm going to have links to Rebecca's website in the show notes, so feel free to check those out. But I hope you enjoy this episode with Rebecca O'Brien. Welcome back to the Mind and Fitness Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Eddie Lindenstein. I came across a post on LinkedIn, or maybe a comment on LinkedIn, from somebody that seems really versed in the stressful side and the burnout side, particularly of corporate work and things like that. And she has a sales and marketing background, which I'm excited about because I have a sales and marketing background. She splits her time between San Francisco and Sweden, which I think is awesome. Rebecca O'Brien, can you hear me? Are you with me?
I am with you. Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah, I'm so excited to have you. So I told you a little bit on off the air kind of what typically this podcast is about. But one of the things that we don't have is people that come on and really talk about this concept of burnout and this concept of stress. And your headline says helping creators and leaders reduce stress, prevent burnout, and embody sustainable success. Gain peace and greater well-being to thrive and lead with presence. And I think that that's, first of all, it's beautifully written.
Thank you.
But second of all, like how did you get into this line of work? You know, maybe give us a little background, a little bit of short story on what the interest is in this work.
Yes. I mean, just like you shared, I'm excited to hear you have a bit of a sales and marketing background as well there. So I'm sure, you know, we could speak about that a lot. But for me, I was in corporate for about 15 years, worked internationally, both in IT companies, you know, events, hospitality management, but always focused on sales or in that field of sales and marketing. And really, you know, living life and loving life and doing all the things that I could do in my early 20s there and kind of early 30s. And typical high achiever, I would say that I am and still am. So always been the perfectionist, you know, a bit of people pleasing in there as well, procrastination. So all of these things, when we dive into them a bit more, we can kind of see the background of internal factors I'm sure we'll speak about a bit later on with regards to burnout.
Yeah.
But it was in this where I was doing all the things, working full time, going to school, trying to get my bachelor's there as well, traveling and living abroad. And I was not honoring my needs and not really listening to my body and just thought, I'm on the fast train, I can do this, I can do it all. I'm superwoman, basically. But about, yeah, just when I turned, just before I turned 35, so almost 9 years ago now, and I just started getting the symptoms. And of course, the symptoms are small in the beginning, and I had these signs, and it was typical, the headaches, you know, some aches and pains in my body, emotional ones as well, a bit of behavioral ones, of course. And I wasn't sleeping. And I kind of just put this all together with, okay, well, this is kind of what life is about right now. And I know I'm doing a lot, but I'm enjoying it. So I continued on there, but the further I progressed and the further, you know, the time went and started seeing doctors and trying to find out what was wrong, I couldn't put it down to stress because I didn't really feel stressed, or actually I didn't know what true stress was or what it would feel like. So I was very much running on autopilot and not connected to my body, you know, just up in my head and going. And eventually, after a year and a half, you know, of meeting different doctors and going through all case of scenarios, they diagnosed me with depression and burnout.
Yeah, for sure. I guess what sort of things were doctors along the way maybe telling you what is going on? Because that experience sounds very similar to kind of my experience on how I kind of decoded what was going on. Like, what sort of guesses were there along the way?
Well, it started of, I think the first ones I went to was like a thyroid doctor and did like a thyroid scan and started there. They didn't see anything, you know, of course, all the blood work and let's say smaller tests were done here. But then I was starting to go to the specialist. So it was the thyroid doctor. I did brain tumor and cancer scans. So we went that route as well, because of course, at this stage, that was kind of, you know, 6 months in of seeing different doctors, my cognitive symptoms were just getting worse and worse. So we did that whole, you know, CAT scan or CT scan, whichever you call it in the States, because I was in Sweden at this time, you know, meeting different doctors. And then at the in between there, I saw another, let's say, smaller hospital or other doctor. And just going through this, where they then referred me to a dementia hospital. And they thought maybe, you know, was it something to do to this? So I was really going through the steps of crossing out, okay, it's not this, it's not this, it's not this. And I do remember, you know, them always asking me, well, what's your work life like? You know, what's your family? Do you have kids? I'm like, no. Everything's good. Maybe I'm a little stressed. Probably wasn't, in a great relationship at that time, but yeah. I was like, this is kind of life. This is day-to-day life. But it was just getting worse and worse and worse. And by the end there, it was actually at the dementia hospital. They figured it's not that, but I did find a doctor there who then kind of saw through everything and really got down to the root cause and was like, you actually have, depression, and you are, burnt out completely.
Yeah. So did you, did you continue kind of on the corporate path at that point and just kind of rework what, the way to which you were handling life? Or was this kind of like an aha moment for you where then it was, I'm going to flip my life on its head sort of thing?
Yeah, it took quite some time. I mean, when I was then burnt out, especially with the physical aspect, I always say and share, let's say in my content, that I really hit that wall and my physical body just shut down and said, enough is enough, because I'd gone and pushed it for so long. So my recovery time was, at first 6 months, I was in bed for 23 hours a day. I had to move home to my parents. They had to take care of me because I couldn't take care of myself. And I was on recovery for about 2 years. And gradually then when I was able to see, different therapists, different specialists, different, support, healing, trauma healing, the whole aspect of that recovery time. But through that, of course, the thoughts are coming up, okay, what do I want to do? The big questions and big reflections, because I had time to finally pause and see, what do I want to do? What is actually making me happy? So it was a huge wake up call or awakening that I actually had time to reflect over. And yeah. I was like, I don't want to do what I'm doing, because this is not actually bringing me joy. Like, once I understood what it was doing to my body and in that situation of, let's say, lack of values, out of alignment, kind of toxic workplace I was in, that one environment, lack of community or so as well. All of those things made sense, where I was very clear on, I don't want to go back to that. So it was then afterwards I started to look at school and come back, kind of full circle to health and wellness, because I've always enjoyed that part. And I've always enjoyed taking care of, let's say, myself and my body in terms of eating and going to the gym and that interest. So I want to dive deeper into that. And that's when I went back to school and started to get my certifications and knew, like, the wellness path, that's the one I want to go down.
Awesome. One thing I do want to touch on, because you have a mention here about the WHO and classification. Can you talk about that a little bit? Something I haven't heard before.
Oh, for burnout.
Yeah. Talk about that.
Yes. Yeah. That's interesting, actually, because I was speaking about this the other day, and on kind of two things come to mind on it. I mean, first of all, meeting other people that have gone through burnout, 10, 15, 20 years ago, however long it is. It's interesting because it wasn't as talked about. It wasn't as mentioned. It wasn't, let's say, in the media of in that sense or that sort. So for me, I had only heard it kind of in passing. And I was like, what is burnout? That would never happen to me. That happens to this, that, and the other people. Like, very wrong mindset and understanding about it.
Yeah.
And then when you look at the WHO, that came out, it's just a few years ago. And with their definition of it, it's very much based on the workplace, or let's say from work burnout, which is such a big part of it, but really seeing it for what it is. And I think years later, and speaking to so many people and both in my work as well, is, work can be one part of it, but burnout is always, you know, internal factors and external factors. Yeah. And you can burn out from going through a death in the family, divorce, a very difficult move, you know, tragedy and different events happening to you. It can be from trauma, bullying, you know, even with caregivers, and look at, you know, what happened there with the pandemic and all the nurses and doctors and hospitals there. So burnout can really happen in so many different ways and is quite complex. And I think with the WHO now, I kind of don't turn to that so much, because I can see burnout really stemming from so many factors. And that was the case with me as well. It wasn't just work. It was everything that had accumulated or that I had ignored or dismissed for 15, 20 years.
Yeah. Yeah. That's wild. I that hadn't even occurred to me, that's being placed as an occupational phenomenon. I'd love to hear you talk about some of these other things that you've mentioned. You've mentioned mindfulness, you've mentioned nutrition. Talk about some of those things and sort of what you've learned. And we can divide these up to make them a little bit easier. But talk about mindfulness, what you've learned about the benefits of it, what sort of a regular practice, if you do have a regular practice for yourself, and then also what is it that you teach about it? Let's start with the mindfulness, and then we'll move into other components.
Yeah, sure. Mindfulness was such a huge part of me today and my practice, but so much in the beginning, and so much in the beginning of when I was introduced to it. And it was in school when I first started. I did my certifications to become a health and wellness coach, and then stress management coach, nutritionist, and mindfulness instructor. It was actually one of the last ones, but it was incorporated, and we had the most beautiful and wonderful teacher, I think, that I had met in the beginning of my school. And just learning about it and what it is and what, you know, what this really practice means, and being in the present moment, it was a bit difficult at first. You know, I'm not going to lie with that. They call it a practice for a reason, and it's for the rest of our lives.
Yeah.
But there was something very, very special about the 9 attitudes of mindfulness and learning about them. And one of them, for example, is acceptance. And I know when I was at my worst and I was burnt out and really just in a dark place and couldn't move and couldn't physically, you know, do anything, that was one of the first things that I had to come to and just really accept and understand what that meant, and not judge it or throw anything, throw anything out there to rush it or to, you know, I have to know, like grab onto control of what's going to happen through my recovery. And it was interesting then learning about mindfulness, because I didn't really know anything about it when I first burnt out, but I did go back to that, and acceptance was a huge, you know, just a very special part for me in those attitudes of learning about it. But I think finding those teachers that you can become very close with and trust and completely let your guard down and look at that of the practices really with compassion and non-judgment, and learning about ourselves and learning about both the outside world and what is happening there and our presence in it, of living, you know, right here and right now, instead of so much in the future or instead of so much in the past.
You had mentioned something a couple minutes ago that caught my ear, and I can't remember. Did you say the 9 languages of mindfulness? Is that, there was something back there? Like,
yes, just, yeah.
Can you talk about that? I've never heard that either. I'm curious to know what that is.
Yeah. So the nine attitudes of mindfulness are, let's see. So it's acceptance, trust, patience, non-judgment, non-striving, gratitude, generosity. And did I mention trust? No, sorry. New beginnings. That's the nine and trust. So there should be nine there.
And how does somebody leverage those or use those? Is this like, it almost sounds like an intention.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So with this, if we just go back to kind of Jon Kabat-Zinn and his world and how he started this and brought this from the East to the West in the 70s and tried this program at, I believe it was the Massachusetts University or teaching through there, but that hospital, and brought this 8-week program to them to see, you know, much of what you mentioned before at the beginning of the podcast for pain patients. And to look at how can we, you know, both with those intentions and both with the, let's say, the eye of being in the present moment and having that lens of compassion, non-judgment, curiosity, and just being, you know, being with ourselves right here and right now, because we don't know what's going to happen in the next moment. And, yeah. And the next moment might be in 1 minute, in 5 minutes, in an hour, in a year, you know, all of those moments hopefully will come for us in the future, but all we have is right now. And so they bring in the nine attitudes to really, I say, you know, to lean on, but also bring into whatever you're going through right now. It might be of, you know, trust, for example, of trusting yourself or a decision you're making, or to trust that it will be okay, or trust that, you know, your knee operation tomorrow or next week, everything's going to be okay. You have done what you know, everything that you've had to do up until this moment, and trust in yourselves and trust in the doctors or the hospital, the support that's going to help you, you know, with this, let's say, operation.
Basically, it sounds almost like sort of changing your own tune or changing your own tone to having just confidence that things will work themselves out, or that things will work out.
Yeah, it is. And it's so much of, I think, the compassion and, let's say, curiosity and non-judgment of everything, especially with ourselves as well, because we can be so hard on ourselves and speak so, you know, ill of ourselves as well. And a big thing with both the intention and, of course, mind is, you know, what does our self-talk look like, and what is our relationship with ourselves? And it's really a deep dive and practice with that. So mindfulness can be, of course, it's the work and it's the presence and being with ourselves. But then we can also introduce like mindful meditations, or let's say a mindful walk, or other mindfulness practices, mindful eating. You know, all of these little things can come and support us, and especially in the workplace as well, like of mindful leadership and how are they communicating, and how are leaders bringing in their soft skills, and also, you know, touching on like the emotional intelligence, but really bringing in that of communication and non-judgment and empathy for their colleagues and peers.
It's like you read my mind, as it's like a perfect segue, because the next thing I wanted to talk about and kind of end with, as we've got just a few more minutes, because I think that one of the things that's really challenging for people is kind of playing this balancing act where, like, they have to work, like people have to work, but working to the point of making themselves sick. And so how can they manage or balance that? And it's probably a really massive topic that's going to be tough to cover in a few minutes, but I'd just love to get your take on that element. So, you know, let's say I have a very stressful job, or stressful bosses or whatever. There's not a lot I can do to change them, like a top-down approach, but how can I sort of readjust my own, I don't know, expectations or experience with having workplaces that are maybe less than ideal, because everybody at some point in time, or most people at some point in time, that's going to be the case, even if it's for a short period of time. I'm very curious on some of your wisdom around workplace wellness.
Yeah. I mean, with workplaces, of course, the easy answer would be, okay, well, let's look for another job. Let's change jobs. Yeah. And of course, you have that choice, and we can make that change, and that is possible. I know it might not happen in 2 days, and I totally respect that. But that might be a bigger question. Like, I don't want to dismiss that question, because I think it's so important as well to look at, you know, am I happy? Am I fulfilled here? What is going on? How is this, you know, how is this environment serving me? Because again, if we look at both the internal factors and external factors, and let's say workplace wellness, but really the stress and how much you can control versus how much you can't. Yes, they can, you know, hopefully if it's an organization or a corporate company that is aware of this and are working on improving their culture and want to take action on this, there's a number of things that they can do with that, and promote it and look at both this psychological safety, bringing in that communication. I've spoken a lot about mental health at work, of how we are treating each other and how we are opening up to each other, and that communication. But there's so much work to really be done there. And when I go back to the external factors and internal factors, is those things that can be very, you know, very stressful, and we will perceive stress differently, and we have, you know, we're different as individuals, and resiliency. It's still, when we look at the external factors, it's the workload, and it's the mismatched values and lack of praise or culture pressure, environment, the poor communication, lack of role clarity, you know, no managerial support or discrimination, you know, bullying again. And if several of those things are happening, I would say that is a very big, big, big red flag to be aware of. You might be in a situation where you can't quit your job. And I get that as well, because I've been in those environments too. And it is almost of a sense of, okay, where am I going to then set my boundaries and protect myself and really protect myself in this environment and make sure I am not, let's say, letting certain things affect me and take that into the aspect of, I don't want to become more stressed. I am not going to, you know, burn out. I want to leave this place. But right now, what can I do for myself? Okay, I can make sure I'm leaving on time, or, you know, arriving at the time that I need to be there. I might not be getting into certain discussions or wanting to work with certain people, but really setting boundaries around that and honoring and protecting your needs. Because if it's an environment you have to be in, and for that time period, you're really going to need to protect yourself and make sure that those things are not affecting you, you know, mentally, physically, spiritually, emotionally, you know, all of those parts, to really take a factor there and be very much self-aware and set, you know, habits in place where you're taking care of yourself beforehand, morning meditation to set you up to have me time. It might be that you really want to exercise after work to, you know, get out of, let's say, the fight and flight, and to be regulating your nervous system throughout the day, but also really have self-care time in the evening and each evening, and make it a priority of you and you time to give back to yourself, and really that self-love, especially if you're in a workplace which is not serving you right now, and you know you eventually want to lead, because this is not going to be good for you in the long run.
So talk for a couple minutes about what do you do now? Because you do some coaching with people, because there mm-hmm. could be somebody listening to this right now that says, hey, this makes a lot of sense or really resonates with me. How do you help people? How do you work with people?
Well, I work with people. It's so individual for each and every one of us, depending on where they're at, let's say in their stress, or, you know, steps. There's five stages to burnout.
Yeah.
And we really want to, you know, hit the brakes before they're in full burnout or in habitual burnout. So kind of taking it back to stage two or three, and where they are struggling and they feel like they're in survival mode and their habits have perhaps gone out the window. You know, their mindset is not there and they are dealing with, let's say, a lot of anxiety with living in the future or worrying about a lot of things, racing thoughts at night. Also, again, with setting boundaries. So I work on a four framework of getting to the self-awareness and doing that work of really inner work of strengths and values, their wants and needs, looking at their triggers, you know, what is their stress response look like, fight, flight, you know, different situations within their life when they're either triggered or then when they're back in their rest and digest and feeling good and enjoying those things that really bring them peace and joy. So we work on the self-awareness, mindset and mindfulness, and then high performing habits to support them throughout both work and life and other, hobbies and what they enjoy to do, because that is so much of the foundation part of it as well. And then unbreakable boundaries to really set this up of energy and time and expressing them and communicating them, because boundaries can be very difficult, and it's difficult to express them at work. And I know from people I work with, it can be even more difficult to express them to close family and friends. So it's working through them and looking at a holistic approach to then support them to reduce their stress and have their toolbox and know how and when to regulate their nervous system. And to bring this into a habit where they are constantly, or let's say very much, much more, feeling peace and experiencing that well-being of work-life harmony.
Yep. Yeah. I think it's a great point. And I think it's something it's tough to define for a lot of people, because again, like, kind of get stuck in this rut of, I've got this job, I've got to work, but at the same time, like, you know, I can't just drop everything and not do anything with myself, sort of thing. So I think that I think some of those tips are good. Where can people find you? Do you have a website or a place for content, things like that?
They can find me on LinkedIn. That's where I spend most of my time. So you can find me on Wellness by Rebecca on LinkedIn. But then I'm also, my website is the same, Wellness by Rebecca, and Instagram and Twitter as well, but mainly LinkedIn.
Awesome. Rebecca, thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate your time.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. Yeah. I really enjoyed it.
Take care.